Radio Prague News.
The Czech Foreign Ministry will be sending an ambassador to the National Transitional Council in Libya. A state prosecutor has dropped a case to investigate Public Affairs Chairman Radek Jon over high bonuses awarded to staffers. And the site of the Šumava logging protest was abandoned Friday after a bomb threat was called in. Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg says he will be sending an ambassador to the National Transitional Council in Libya. Mr. Schwarzenberg has said that the Czech Republic will not recognize the rebel government until it controls the entire country and does not intend to open an embassy. However, it is important, he says, to be in contact with the emerging institutions in Libya, for which purpose a part-time ambassador will be sent to Benghazi, where the interim leadership is based. The previous Czech ambassador to Tripoli was withdrawn in February at the start of the insurgency. The National Transitional Council has currently been recognized by most of Western Europe and the United States. A state prosecutor has halted a move to look into bonuses awarded by Public Affairs Chairman Radek Jon to his staffers, saying that the payments were unethical but not illegal. Police have sought to investigate Mr. Jon regarding the payment of 2.4 million crowns in bonuses to 10 of his closest subordinates at the end of last year when he was Minister of the Interior. The case was brought against Mr. Jon after he publicly defended a bonus of nearly 500,000 crowns to the head of the fire department, intended to keep him from retiring. Other large bonuses, he said then, were paid out because there would not be money for them in the coming year. However, in his formal justification, Mr. Jon stated that the bonuses were paid out for the performance of extraordinary or outstanding work-related tasks. A group of residents of the Šumava National Park on Friday morning held a protest against environmental activists preventing the cutting of trees in a protected zone of the forest. Some 200 residents arrived at the site of felling to thank police officers and loggers and to bring food for the workers. Activists have been shackling themselves around trees and sitting in the treetops all week as police attempt to remove them from the area. The park management intends to fell about 4,000 trees in the protected zone in order to limit the spread of a bark beetle infestation that has devastated the forest. Environmental groups maintain that the park management has no exemption to cut in the zone. However, a preliminary court order allowed loggers to begin the work there on Monday. All involved in the Šumava protest abandoned the area on Friday afternoon after a bomb threat was announced. The police, guards, loggers, and activists all left the restricted area to await a bomb squad after an anonymous caller phoned in the threat on the emergency hotline. Six activists had remained at the site and do not intend to return on Friday. An organizer for the protest group said he considered the threat a provocation intended to show the activists in a poor light. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be partly cloudy with a chance of scattered showers and daytime highs in the low 20s Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Sarah Barufka. Coming up in today's program, the granddaughter of the Jewish founder of the Kohinoor Haberdashery factory is fighting to get her family's property back. We have all the latest business news, and a little later in the program, we talk to the artistic director of the summer film school in Uherské Hradiště. All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. Two years ago, representatives of 46 governments gathered at the former Nazi concentration camp in Terezín, an hour's drive north of the Czech capital, Prague. Among the many pledges contained within the pages of the Terezín Declaration was a promise to expedite the return of private property seized from Jews during the Holocaust and still not returned. Many, however, are still waiting to get their property back. Rob Cameron reports on one such case.
This is the Kohinoor Haberdashery factory here in the Prague district of Vršovice, and it was founded in 1907 by two Jewish brothers, Jindřich and Sigmund Valdes. They built a hugely successful business empire, conquering the world snap fastener market with their famous Kohinoor brand and becoming multimillionaires in the process. Then in 1939, Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia. The Valdes family lost everything, their property Aryanized, stolen, in other words, under the Nuremberg laws. Sigmund Valdes fled to New York with his family. Jindřich, a Czechoslovak patriot to the end, stayed and was interned in Buchenwald. In 1941, he managed to get out, but he died in uncertain circumstances en route to America. There, the story should have ended, like so many others, a Czechoslovak Jewish family broken up and forced to flee for their lives, their property lost forever. 70 years later, however, Sigmund Valdes's granddaughter, Jiřina Novákova, is trying to win her family's property back.
I would like this factory back, not because I think I must have a factory, but I think that it's correct. The things should be done correctly. This property wasn't transferred properly. And I think that if we want to change the country sociologically, politically, economically, we must also do these things correctly.
In the beginning, Jiřina Novákova wanted just one thing, to get back a famous painting by the Czech artist František Kupka, showing a young woman wearing a Kohinoor fastener like a monocle. Kupka painted the work as a gift to the Valdes family, and it was later adapted as the company's logo. But it was lost to the family when the factory was seized by Nazi Germany, then nationalised by the newly liberated Czechoslovakia, then again seized by the communists in 1948, before finally being privatised after the fall of communism in 1989. Mrs. Novákova was told that in order to win custody of the painting, she'd first have to win back the factory. So in 1994, she went to court. After 15 years of litigation, she won a Pyrrhic victory, being awarded one half of the factory's buildings and one half of all of its property, including one half of the famous painting. Kohinoor's owners appealed, and last year the Constitutional Court ruled in their favour. Kohinoor's management declined requests for an interview, but Oldřich Hodiera is the company's lawyer.
The Kohinoor factory was nationalized under the so-called Beneš decrees in 1945. In fact, it was decree number 145. That particular decree applied to metalworking enterprises employing more than 500 people. So in Kohinoor's case, this was the overriding criterion. The fact that it was a metalworking enterprise employing 500 people, regardless of whether the rightful owners were German, Czech, Jewish, or anything else.
Jiřina Novákova says the Constitutional Court verdict is flawed. For a start, Kohinoor didn't have 500 employees in 1945, and anyway, her family made it abundantly clear in 1994 they were claiming the property, and so it should never have been privatised in the first place. So far, that argument has fallen on deaf ears, but Jiřina Novákova hasn't given up the fight. A fight she says her grandfather and his brother would want her to carry on to the end.
Thank you for that, Rob. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I am now joined in the studio by Jan Richter for this week's business news.
The volume of direct foreign investment in the Czech Republic amounted last year to around 113 billion crowns, or more than 6.67 billion US dollars, which was 56% more than the year before, according to a report by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development released on Friday. Meanwhile, Czech firms invested some 28.4 billion crowns abroad in 2010, according to the Czech Invest Agency. Among the four Visegrad nations, the Czech Republic was only surpassed by Poland. Czech Industry and Trade Minister Martin Kocourek said the volume of foreign investment returned to the pre-crisis levels. However, the UN agency warned that future investment in the country might be threatened by inflation and fiscal imbalance.
The transport ministry is planning to increase the toll on Czech roads by 25% next year, the daily Hospodářské noviny reported on Thursday. The increase should bring another 2 billion crowns into the ministry's budget, which has been affected by the government's austerity measures. The ministry also plans to raise the price of the annual highway pass for personal vehicles from 1,200 to 1,500 crowns, or over 88 US dollars. That should generate additional 700 million crowns for the ministry. However, the Czech Automobile Association called the plan a provocation, as Czech roads are among the worst in Europe.
Prices of new cars in the Czech Republic decreased by 9% last year, which was among the biggest drops in Europe, the European Commission said on Tuesday. In the whole of the European Union, new cars prices declined on average by 2.5%. However, cars makers have warned prices would not go down anymore. The Czech-based German-owned manufacturer Škoda Auto announced a 1% hike in the prices of their Fabia, Octavia, Superb and Yeti models, which is to take effect in August.
Debts of Czech households with banks and other financial institutions rose by 7.3 billion crowns in June to 1.081 trillion crowns, or more than 63.7 billion US dollars, the Czech National Bank said on Friday. Over the past year, the households' debts rose by 69 billion crowns. The Czech Statistical Office has warned that expenses of most Czech households grow faster than their incomes. Only 40% of them would be able to pay an unexpected expense of 8,500 crowns. It is also becoming increasingly difficult to collect debts from those unable to pay. Several large Czech debt collecting agencies have complained about a sharp increase in cases that end up in court.
And finally, the largest Czech distiller Rudolf Jelínek is moving its headquarters to the Netherlands, the daily E15 reported on Tuesday. The head of the company's board, Zdeněk Chromý, said the main reasons behind the move included a higher level of protection, a better position for negotiations with the company's partners on supplies and acquisitions, as well as a more stable legal environment. Rudolf Jelínek follows several large and medium-sized Czech firms, including PPF, NWR and Zentiva, who have also established their headquarters in the Netherlands. Last year, the firm adopted a holding structure and now owns distillers in Bulgaria, Romania and Chile. However, the firm says it has no plans to close down its original plant in the Moravian town of Vizovice.
This week's business news brought to you by Jan Richter. Thank you, Jan. And now in this week's arts, Jan Wellinger talks to the artistic director of the Uherské Hradiště Summer Film School, Pavel Bednářík.
Welcome to the arts. Now, if you're a regular listener of Radio Prague, you'll probably already be familiar with the Summer Film School held annually at Uherské Hradiště. It's a long-running and largely unique festival in the Czech Republic, which offers audiences a rare opportunity to view new and classic films, as well as to take part in discussions, lectures, and even master classes with world-class film directors. This week, I spoke to the film school's artistic director, Pavel Bednářík, who told me more about appearances by this year's main guests, Emir Kusturica and Aki Kurismaki. And he also told me a little about the history of the film school itself.
The basic difference is that our festival is a non-competition festival and that it's grounded in the 1960s when the movement of film clubs started to operate, and it was organized by Czech State and Czechoslovak Film Archive. And basically, this is the main reason why people came for 20 or 30 years to this place or to the festival in Uherské Hradiště and meeting and gathering to watch movies, to discuss about them. And the festival is specific with the main presence of discussions, masterclass, workshops and other possibilities how to encounter with film, with the guests, with the directors, film historians and film theoreticians. So this is basically what means the main title, Film School.
I know there have been very many famous guests in the past. One of the sort of regulars in the past was Terry Gilliam, I understand.
Right. Terry Gilliam was one of the guests because he loved Uherské Hradiště and he visited this town for several times. And actually, he was the one who spread the information also about the character and the atmosphere of the festival. But according to all the guests on our festival, it is a hard work, and it is a long-term work and discussion with the guests or with their agents to get them to Uherské Hradiště, because still it is a town, a small town in South Moravia, about which nobody knows in abroad. So we just have to wait till our references spread through the guests who already been here. And basically, I think this is the thing which we might be proud of, that we still have the big names coming to Uherské Hradiště and persuading them that this is the place where they can meet with audience who love their films and want to discuss about them.
And just a follow-up question to that, historically, why was it that Uherské Hradiště was chosen?
Actually, the festival or the meeting or the gathering of the representative of film clubs took place in many cities and towns during the 1970s and 1980s. And finally, Uherské Hradiště was the place where it got seated at the beginning of the 90s because of the former director, Jiří Králík, who was the head of the cinema, of the local cinema in Uherské Hradiště. So he put up the roots for the festival, and after the years when people got used to it, and also the people from Uherské Hradiště and also the bar and restaurants runners got used to this audience, which now includes about 4,000 or 5,000 visitors, then it was decided that Uherské Hradiště is definitely the place where such gathering, such festival can take place every year. And of course, the support of local municipality and of local sponsors is the important reason why it still takes place in one town during past 20 years.
Now, last Saturday, the Bosnian filmmaker Emir Kusturica, who's famous for films such as Time of the Gypsies or Underground, was recognized by the Czech Association of Film Clubs, as was Otakar Vávra. There's an interesting connection there, isn't it, between the two men?
Actually, yes. Otakar Vávra is the person who founded the department of directing on FAMU, and basically founded FAMU as a professional institution for filmmakers. And Emir Kusturica was one of his students during 1970s, and as he is used to say, he was one of his best students. So we just decided to make tribute to both of these important filmmakers to manage their meeting, and both of them got a special award from the festival. And I think it's quite important to understand that FAMU was and still is an international school which helps such important person as Emir Kusturica is to become a famous director.
And he was, of course, recognized for his outstanding contribution to European cinema. Could you describe for me a little bit what that moment was like when he received the award?
Actually, the moment was quite surprising because Emir Kusturica has now quite a big health problems, he told us, and he just had to persuade him to attend the ceremony, because he doesn't like ceremonies. He just lives his own dream, his own utopia in his village, which he built a couple of years ago. And the encounter with the journalist and with people who just loved their films is not that easy for him. But finally, when he got on the stage, he was surprised, and I think it was very heartful, this speech, when he talked about his work and about the importance of festivals, that I think the place just persuaded him that he's at the right town where people love cinema and attend his film and love and appreciate his films.
I have to say, I wasn't aware of his health problems, because I had read that while he was in Prague and at the festival as well, that he and his band, the No Smoking Orchestra, were to play. So I wanted to ask about that as well.
Well, actually, the answer about the health problems was something which we didn't understand, because later on they had a concert with No Smoking Orchestra in Uherské Hradiště, and it was one of the best concerts during the history of the festival. So actually, I think the Wild Mood Swings is something like a characteristic of such a great director as Mr. Kusturica is. But definitely No Smoking Orchestra is the project which he lives for 25 years. and which he maintains. And this was also the reason why he came, because playing with the band and with the show is something which helps him to get energy for his other film projects.
We've been talking about famous directors at this year's festival. It's not only Emir Kusturica or Otakar Vavra. There's also the famous Finnish director, Aki Kaurismäki, I understand.
Yeah, Aki Kaurismäki is one of the biggest guests of the festival, attending the next weekend, the end of the festival. And I think it's the important counterpart of Emir Kusturica, of the Balkanian inspiration, because he presents his body of work, including specific Finnish melancholia. So I think it's quite balanced program. And as I hope, people will appreciate his new film Lavr, the same as his older films from the 1980s. And especially his masterclass Saturday.
Do you know the details of the masterclass? Is there a specific topic that Mr. Kaurismäki is going to be talking about?
Actually, we just had a confirmation that he is going to make the masterclass, but the specific topics, I think, will be his work with his brother, Mika Kaurismäki, the beginnings of their work in 1980s, and probably he's going to talk about immigration and about the topic of his latest film, Lavr, but as we have an experienced leader of these discussions, I think it might be very inspiring in many ways, in many topics.
One important aspect of the film school at Uheska Hragiške is, of course, the different cycles that you offer. This year you're offering viewers the chance to see again the films of the late Krzysztof Kieślowski. What films are you showing by him? And if I may ask a personal question, how do you think his films have aged?
Actually, I think this program of Mr. Kieślowski are showing up the roots of the documentary roots of his feature films, which is important part of his body of work, and the general switch or general change and decision to make feature films is the crucial moment of his career. So we decided to show the documentaries, or the main documentaries which inspired Krzysztof Kieślowski, then almost all of the documentaries which he shot when he was studying film school in Lodz, and later on all the films, all the feature films, which were inspired by the documentary tradition. So we decided not to present quite famous and well-known Teller trilogy, but on the other hand, we decided to make a renewed premiere of Double Life of Veronique, which is a film which was shown in Czech cinemas and Czech film clubs for several times with a big success. So, as I hope, this is the film which didn't grow old. And the same thing is that the heritage of Krzysztof Kieślowski is still the same as it was 20 years ago.
I remember reading about Kieślowski's documentary work, some of which I saw. And I remember there was one which took place in a Polish hospital, which showed just how difficult it was, for example, to work in a hospital or to survive in a hospital. Is that film also being shown?
Yeah, this film is also being shown. And I think it shows up the specific tendency of his documentaries, and that is showing up the life of people in socialist regime through the institutions where they encounter and where they feel hopeless and helpless, and where the power and the ideology shows up in a quite specific way. So this is something which even for Czech audience might be quite familiar, because the history and the experience is the same for Poland 1980s and for Czechoslovakia in 1980s.
Okay, and as the festival continues, how would you describe your own feelings about it? It must be an enormous task for you and all of your colleagues to be able to put such a festival together. And what have been your impressions so far?
Well, the crucial problem which comes every year is the lack of money, because when you want to organize a festival which should have some technological program standards, you just have to count on a bigger budget than we do at the moment. But still, we did the maximum which is possible among the budget for this year. And the situation or the experience at the moment after the 5 days, which we have, the people, according to the weather, to rainy weather, are attending cinemas much more than when it's sunshine. So hopefully the weather helps us to get the people in the cinemas in quite big amounts.
Pavel Bednářík, the artistic director of the Uherské Hradiště Summer Film School, was talking there to Jan Wellinger for this week's edition of The Arts. We are now rounding off our regular weekday program with Soundcheck, our popular Czech language learning program brought to you this time by Ruth Frankova.
Tak jdi, nebo běž, nebo jeď, vezmi nohy na ramena, jdi, nebo běž, nebo leď.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Soundcheck, Radio Prague's Czech language series in which you can learn idioms through song lyrics. Today we'll be listening to a legendary 1969 song by Helena Vondráčková called Přejdi Jordán. The phrase to listen out for is Vezmi nohy na ramena. The title of the song Přejdi Jordán, řeku všech nadějí means Cross the River Jordan, the river of all hopes, and it refers to the biblical legend according to which Moses led the Jews out of Egypt across the River Jordan into the promised land of Canaan. The singer urges one of the refugees to leave his home and cross the river in order to find a new and safe home.
Tak jdi, nebo běž, nebo jeď, vezmi nohy na ramena, jdi, nebo běž, nebo leď, sily hlava otevřená, běž, raději hned.
Tak jdi, nebo běž, nebo jeď. Go or run or ride, says Helena Vondráčková in the opening line of the song. In other words, as she continues in the second verse, Vezmi nohy na ramena. This phrase literally translates as take your legs on your shoulders, but the proper English translation would be take to your heels. Listen to the phrase Vezmi nohy na ramena once again.
Tak jdi. Nebo běž, nebo jeď, vezmi nohy na ramena, jdi, nebo běž, nebo leď, sily hlava otevřená, běž, raději hned, radši teď, v ruce třeba po kolena, uzlík svůj zbát, nečekej dál, jdi pryč, všeho nech, cestu znáš, přes ta pole neoraná, jdi.
The singer continues her urging in the second stanza when she says, Jdi pryč, všeho nech, or go away, leave everything behind. And finally in the chorus she steps up the pressure by singing Chvátej, chvátej, or hurry up, hurry up. Have another listen.
Chvátej, 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 vyhnanče z míst, kde jsi žil. Chvátej, 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 na tisíc mil. Přejdi Jordán, řeku všech nadějí.
Anyway, I hope you are safe where you are and you don't have to take your legs to your shoulders. In case this lesson was too hasty, you can check it out on our website, that is at www.radio.cz. But that's all for now. Thank you for listening and naschledanou.
Ruth Frankova there, wrapping up our Radio Prague English show for today with Soundcheck. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from myself, Sarah Borufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.